What is it, sir? Home.
You can almost see it from here.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 42, The Civil War Over Civil War. Well, a hearty welcome back, everyone, to the only podcast that deals specifically with story structure and story analysis. As I mentioned in the introduction, my name is Jim Hull. I am a writer slash story consultant slash story theory aficionado who has been involved in some way or another with the dramatic theory of story for at least 20 years, maybe more than that. I discovered it somewhere in the mid-90s while I was surfing the internet trying to figure out inspiration for my really cool idea about a pyramid under the ice in Antarctica. It's very original. And ran across the Dramatica's concept of the main character growth and stop or start. And it blew me away because it covered everything. There were no caveats, there were no exceptions, as opposed to the McKee class that I had taken a few years prior. I got hooked, went to one of the classes, saw the theme browser in the actual Dramatica Story Expert application, and just knew that this was the life for me. And so that's why you have this podcast. A couple new updates. I guess the biggest update is the update about updates on the Narrative First site. On the very front page, you know, I got rid of the blog so that I could put it under blog and then just provide kind of a landing page for people who didn't even know what was going on with the site or what it was all about, that they could actually learn what the whole purpose of the website is for. But then it was starting to look a bit drab to me, so I figured, all right, I got to put at least something up there. So I went ahead and put just a banner for the most recent thing. So right now, if you go look, if you're listening to this the day this is released, or at least the week that it's released, you'll probably see the through lines of Dunkirk, which is something that I'll be getting into in a little bit. And then right below it, you'll see a recent updates button, and then that will take you directly to the update page, which is all the latest stuff. So if you're gone for a couple days, you get caught up writing, and then you want to catch up with everything in story structure and story analysis, just go there and hit that button, or you can just go to narrativefirst.com/updates. And then last week I got really inspired because my dad went through the course that's there on the front page, you know, where it says, ready to start writing a great story. Well, if you enter your email address and you click the button, you get a 9-lesson course, which usually I had spaced out over the course of 2 days because I figured that's about how much time it took people to answer each of the questions. And it essentially takes any kind of story idea you have and helps you turn it into a treatment by layering in different story points. So it starts with the story limit, then goes to the story goal, and you know, you just kind of build up your story from there. And it's been really successful, and a lot of people really love it and appreciate it. But my dad had this really good point where it's like, well, what if you had no story idea at all and you just like wanted to just come up with something? Because to him, it was really apparent that just adding those story points, you can actually start to create a story out of nothing, which is really perceptive because that's exactly how it works. I mean, you start adding a story limit, and then you start adding a story goal and an outcome and a judgment and then a main character, and eventually you have yourself a story. So what I came up with is I'm going to do two paths. So you either have a story idea that you want to do, or you have no idea and you just want to start creating one. So there'll be two paths there in that course. And I'm also, originally I had it where about halfway through you would send me what you have, and then I would help you determine a missing part of your story using Dramatica. And at first that was pretty overwhelming because of the response, but now that I have a way of being able to handle it, I'm going to put that back in. So about halfway through, you know, you'll be able to send it in, and then I'll give you a little surprise based on the Dramatica theory of story. And then also I've added, this was also my dad's idea, sorry, there's a time limit, so it'll force writers to actually finish, because a lot of writers, I guess, procrastinate. I'm not like that, but I guess a majority of writers don't never finish what they start. So now when you open up those emails, the countdown starts, and you know you have an hour or two to finish one lesson. And then when you're done, you click submit, and then you get the next one, and so on and so on. And I'm really excited to see how that improves the quality of storytelling, the amount of storytelling, and helps people keep their momentum and their motivation up. covering three different films today. I'm going to be talking about Logan, Dunkirk, and Captain America Civil War. The last one, I had no idea I was going to be talking about. Just for fun, I had watched it over the weekend because it was finally free, or at least, on Netflix. And I enjoyed it, and I knew that there was discussion on the Dramatica discussion forums about certain aspects of the story, so I just typed up a quick analysis and published it, and then got into a bit of a discussion with a really great writer over how the actual story form of that movie looks. And so I'll be getting to that at the end. But first, I want to talk about Logan, which apparently everybody loves. I didn't realize this was such a huge hit. I was quite busy earlier this year. I saw it. I thought it was great. It was really fun. I was a huge fan of Wolverine growing up. That was my favorite comic book character. Snicked, right? Isn't that the sound the claws make? Snicked! Yeah, I like the one where he beat up Spider-Man. That was really fun to me. Yeah, so I realized a lot of people, really liked the film and watched it, a couple weeks ago with that marathon and thought it was a great story. It had a really strong story form, and it was really interesting to me because it was clear, the other Wolverine movies I haven't seen, and I have a feeling they're not complete or they're deficient in the storytelling, but this one, is above 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, and for good reason, because it's got a great story in it. I mean, it's really, really good, really complete. So last night I met with a writer-director who's in the process of developing shorts and eventually features for a studio, and, just sat down with him, and he had no idea what Dramatica was, and so we went through, I asked him what his favorite film was, it was Logan, and so I just took him step by step through the entire process, and it was really great just to see how quickly he was able to pick up on, he's a very intuitive writer and he picked up on stuff really, really quickly. Apparently, those people who are writer-directors and have had experience writing, directing for 10, 20 years, when they're introduced to Dramatica, it's just like, oh, yeah, totally, I know exactly what you're talking about. So this was kind of the same experience last night. There were some things that was like, oh, wow, that's really insightful, that's a really different way to think about it. But in the end, I think the part that he appreciated the most, which I wish more people knew about, is that, in other versions of story or other story paradigms, theme is like the most important thing. You have to figure out your theme first, and that's going to dictate every scene, So greed leads to destruction, right? Or generosity leads to triumph. And every scene is going to be greed leads to destruction. And it's super annoying because then you feel like you're hitting your audience over the head with your message, your theme. And the great thing about Dramatica, when you, try and figure out what your story's problems are, the theme just naturally comes out of it based on what it is you want to explore. It's not like you have to come up with a message. And really, the entire Dramatica model, all four through lines, they're all theme up and down. There is one level, the variation level, which is the closest thing to theme. But, the entire thing itself actually is theme. You're pitting one perspective against another perspective. Actually, you're pitting four perspectives against each other and coming out with some greater meaning out of that. And to me, it's great because it's working in the background and it's not hitting people over the head, which is really ironic because in Logan, a lot of people get hit over the head, but physically. We went through it and I'm going to hook up an analysis for it. I'll write one up. I'm definitely going to do a character arc snapshot. I think this would be a perfect one to do it, especially since there's so many people that are into it. And I'm also even considering doing kind of like a video analysis where I just quickly go over the different story points in a more conversational style, kind of like the podcast, but you get a look at my face, which makes it that much better. So we went over the various through lines in Logan, and let me see if I can bring up a picture of the board from last night, and I'll see if I can post this. But we went through started out with the four through lines, the overall story through line, main character through line, influence character through line, and relationship story through line. And of course, the overall story through line of Logan is really clear. Transporting a mutant child to safety. That's what everybody's dealing with. And of course, it's very important, when you first start out and you're trying to identify these through lines, that you identify where the problem actually is, how it's showing up in the story. And I know that might be confusing when we get into the discussion about Civil War later, about the source of conflict. That's how, we usually determine it. But what we're talking about is the source of conflict as far as what the source within the story, where is it coming out? Where do we actually see it? And here, everybody's dealing with the problems of transporting a mutant child to safety. The main character through line, obviously, was Logan, and then, the writer talked about how, I tried to get him to come up with what Logan's personal issues were outside of transporting a mutant child to safety. And obviously, he's dealing with the fact that he's lost his purpose and that he's pushed away everyone he's ever loved. But really, when you get right down to it, His personal problem that he's dealing with is that he's dying, right? The adamantium that's laced his bones, which is very impressive, of course, that I know that, but that's because he's my favorite comic book character. That adamantium is slowly killing him, and he's basically on this path towards death. And that's what he's dealing with personally. And then we went to the influence character through line. And at first, the first candidate he brought up was Xavier, Professor X, because obviously Xavier is there and he's, you know, counseling him and giving him all this great advice, and that's what an influence character is, right? But not really. The influence character throughline represents an alternative approach to the main character's way of solving problems. Now, Xavier does have a slightly different way of seeing the world. You know, he's trying to get Logan to appreciate life and family, love, and all that stuff is more important than anything else. But really, he's acting like, and the writer-director last night pointed this out, he's more of a mentor character. And that's when I had a chance to explain that Dramatica's idea of the guardian archetypal character, which is what most people consider the mentor character, is composed of elements of help and conscience. They're there to help the story along, and they're also there to provide the voice of conscience. And then that made sense, but then, of course, then this morning I was thinking, wait, he's not actually help in conscience, he's actually hinder in conscience, which is the opposite. You know, every time he has one of those seizures, he's a huge pain in the butt. Having to transport him everywhere, I mean, he's just kind of getting in the way, and he's kind of an obstacle. And that's where Dramatica is really great, because you can take what is a familiar character trope or archetype, which is the help in conscience, and you can trade those elements out, and now you have hinder in conscience, which is great. That's what makes Xavier such a more interesting character, because he's not the usual typical mentor that you would expect. So once I established how he was more of an archetypal character in the overall story, it was clear that Laura, or X-23, the little girl, represented a hugely different way of solving problems. You know, like, Logan is out, he's done with it, and she's just, I'm going to be the most violent thing that you've seen in years, or in any comic book. And she's so young and so cute, why would she do all those awful things to those men? And she represents the love that he needs, and he pointed out that he had heard that the writers thought that the only thing that could actually scare Logan is love, that love would actually scare him the most, and she represents that love that he could possibly have in an actual relationship. And then that brought us to the relationship story through line, which is the relationship between the influence character and the main character. And so we discussed it between Xavier and Logan. Obviously, there's a father-son sort of dynamic there, but again, it's more objectified. It's not as heartfelt as the father-daughter relationship between Logan and Laura. And that is the heart of the story. That's where you find the heart of every complete story, is in the relationship story through line. And it's important to start thinking of the relationship not as, you know, main versus impact, which is what it was erroneously called a couple years back, but more as an actual relationship. And there's a purpose to that relationship, and it furthers the overall story along. It complements the overall story in the same way that the influence character complements the main character. It's an essential part that it's almost like a character, the relationship itself. And so here, it's father and daughter, and it's not how Logan feels, and it's not how she feels, but it's how that dynamic, that father-daughter relationship feels, that gives it heart. And that's why, unfortunately, you know, Dunkirk had a bit of an issue putting that heart in the story. In fact, it was completely absent altogether. So not that it wasn't an emotional film, but it was not as emotional as Logan, for sure. It wasn't as emotional as Moonlight, for sure, because it didn't have that relationship story through line. And I'll get to that when we get to Dunkirk. But really, Laura, as the influence character, is a mirror for Logan, which is exactly what the influence character is supposed to present to the main character. And that gave me a great opportunity to go over the You and I video montage. You and I are both alike. No, we're nothing alike. We're nothing alike. We're completely different. That's my Arnold. That's not even the line. It's completely off. But yeah, usually the influence character will say we're completely alike, and the main character will say we're nothing alike, and then they go back and forth over, you know, who's alike and who's not. And that's because the influence character is an actual mirror to the main character and is close enough that the main character will actually consider, you know what, maybe I should start doing things a different way. And so Laura here, she represents the animalistic impulses, the original Wolverine and a mirror, and she shows how, you know, sometimes you just have to give in to those impulses if you're going to survive. And then that leads to the main character dynamics. You know, if you have to give in to those animalistic impulses in order to survive, that suggests that Logan is a changed main character. I went over the main character resolve story point in a narrative, And that determines whether the main character changes their resolve and adopts the influence character's way of doing things, or they remain steadfast and the influence character changes and adopts the main character's way of doing things. Here, it's very clear that he's the change character. And the director last night said, well, oh, so that's the difference between a learning or a teaching hero, which is how it's usually discussed, because it seems like the changed character learns something and the steadfast character teaches people something. The only problem with that is it's subjective because, you know, or opinionated, I guess, and maybe not subjective, because there are many steadfast characters that are not teaching anybody a thing. You know, like the main character in Memento is not teaching anybody anything particularly productive, but he is steadfast. And then we went over the main character growth, which of course is what brought me to Dramatica, about stop or start. And Logan very definitely has a chip on his shoulder. A stop-changed character has a chip on their shoulder, and a start-changed character has a hole in their heart. So clearly Logan is stop. And then we went to doer or beer in the main character story point of approach. And that one was really interesting because I used William Money, the Clint Eastwood character in Unforgiven, as the classic example of a beer character, somebody who prefers to change themselves before taking external action. And it was clear to me and to the director last night that Logan was a doer. I mean, he preferred to take external action. He's not the kind of person that would change himself. But when I brought up the example from Unforgiven, he had a moment to pause and thought, well, maybe Logan is a beer then, because, you know, he's kind of the same way. And it's really great because they both experience the same kind of situation. They both have people surrounding them, telling them they're going to kill him, and they actually act differently. So in Unforgiven, when he's in the bar or the saloon, and Gene Hackman surrounds him, and, you know, all his posse are there, and they're going to blow his head off, and, you know, Eastwood reacts not by pulling a trigger, not by attacking, but by pouring himself another drink and saying, I'm not that kind of person. No, and beers prefer to get drunk. They like to change themselves through alcohol and spirits, because it's much easier for them, and they prefer to actually try and change themselves to adapt to what's going on around them, rather than try and force the environment around them to adapt. Now, in Logan, it's the exact opposite, because at that compound, they all surround him in the same way that Gene Hackman surrounded Eastwood, and they tell him, all right, we'll hand over the girl, and of course, Logan doesn't sit there and get drunk and try and change himself. He very definitely changes the world around him and busts out of that compound. So, he's very clearly a doer character. And then we went on to the main character problem-solving style of linear or holistic, and clearly Logan is a linear problem solver. He's very much cause and effect. Then that led to the story driver, story limit, story outcome, and story judgment, which are the plot dynamics of the narrative. When you take a look at every complete narrative, the drivers, essentially the plot points that you know of, the starting plot point, the ending plot point, the midpoint, first act turn, second act turn, all that stuff, they will all either be actions or they will all either be decisions. And actions will either force decisions or decisions will force actions. And here, obviously in Logan, they're actions, right? You know, the mom shows up in the beginning, they get them across the border at the end. Sorry for any spoilers. Somebody very important gets killed in the middle. I'll try not to spoil that. And that forces some decisions to be made. Very much so that it's a story driver of action in that film. And then I went on to the story limit, which sets the scope for a narrative. And then that's either option lock or time lock. And that was interesting because to the director last night, the option lock seemed like it was a time lock. Well, it feels like they're running out of time when they're in an option lock. Because I gave the example of Beauty and the Beast where the rose petals are falling. He's like, well, it feels like they're running out of time. And that's the cool part, is subjectively, from the point of view of characters, the limit feels like it's opposite. So in an option lock story, a story limited by an option lock, it'll feel like you're running out of time, because as your options are dwindling, you feel like you don't have any more time left. Whereas in a time lock, a legitimate time lock like High Noon or 3:10 to Yuma or anything like that, as time is running out, you feel like you're running out of options. It's really cool how that works. And so then clearly Logan is an option lock. It's essentially, it's a road trip movie. You know, they got to get from point A to point D, point B. And the sooner they get to point B, the closer they are to the actual climax of the film. And then finally, the story outcome and story judgment, which provide the meaning of the entire narrative. The story outcome is the logistical concern. Did it end in success or failure? Did they get the girl to safety or did they all die? Success is clearly the answer. And then story judgment is the emotional judgment and the emotional outcome of the main character. Did they overcome their angst? Were they able to get rid of their personal problems? Or are they still, you know, beset by all this grief and emotion and hard times? And Was it a bad thing that everything turned out the way it did, or was it a good thing? And here in Logan, it's a good thing. He has that family that he's always wanted, and he's able to die in peace. Sorry, I think I just ruined it for you. So with that, and again, I'm going to write up a whole analysis of this and do some other videos on it. With that, then we went to the through lines, through the domains. And this is the problem that I was having with Civil War earlier this week. And what you do is you take those four through lines and you apply them to one of the four domains of conflict, and that's how you complete a that's how you create a complete narrative. So you either have a situation, an activity, a fixed attitude, or a manner of thinking. Those are the four different areas where conflict exists. Situations are fixed external things. Activities are external processes. Fixed attitudes are fixed internal things, you know, what you think. And then manners of thinking are internal processes, kind of like the internal version of activities, but here it's how you think. And what you do is you apply those four through lines. Those four through lines are actually perspectives on conflict to those different domains, and you get a complete story. The only idea being that the overall story and the relationship story need to be diagonally across from each other, and the main character and the influence character need to be diagonally across from each other because they provide the greatest amount of conflict when you put them across in a dynamic pair configuration like that. So if you don't have dramatica.com/downloads handily available, you can look at the table of story elements there. Situation is in the upper left, activity is in the upper right, manner of thinking is in the lower left, and fixed attitude is in the lower right. And the first one that was very clear, which was nice, considering everything that went on this week, was that the overall story was in activity, right? It's a lot of killing, a lot of journeying, getting her, you know, to the end goal there, the Shangri-La place at the end. Conflict shows up in this story in activities, and that would put the relationship in manner of thinking, which is great for that father-daughter dynamic. You know, the conflict between them is very much a part of dysfunctional father-daughter relationship. I mean, that's essentially the heart of the entire thing. Main character, so then that leaves Logan in either situation or fixed attitude. And with, you know, the fact that he's dying and that his body is slowly, you know, killing him, he's in a fixed situation. I mean, that's an external problem. And that puts the girl, Laura, in fixed attitude. And certainly the impact that she has on everybody around her has to do with that animalistic impulse. And then I took him into the Dramatica Story Expert application. We picked all those different story points, and then we're presented, I think we were down to maybe 256 story forms out of 32,000. And then I discussed the idea of the concerns of each through line and how that focuses in the narrative on a certain area or a certain type of conflict that is the same throughout the four different through lines, but just from a different perspective. And from there, we were able to determine that the overall story, well, actually, I think what we did is we started with the main character. So if he's in a situation and he's dealing with the fact that his body's dying, he would have one of four concerns, either the past, the present, the future, or progress, or how things are changing. So he has issues with the past, but that's not really the entire film. And he's definitely thinking about the future in some areas, and he's definitely thinking about the present. But the one concern that happens throughout the entire narrative is that progress. He is slowly, progressively dying, and that's a huge concern for him. And when you pick that concern, it automatically sets the concerns in the other three through lines. So in the overall story through line, that sets the concern to doing, which is great because you would assume it's obtaining because it's about getting the girl. The goal is getting the girl to safety. But really, and this is what the director pointed out last night, the entire film is about the journey, not the destination. And it's that journey, it's that doing, it's that getting there that is problematic in the film. And that would set the influence character's concern to impulsive responses. And certainly she has a bit of an issue with impulsive responses. I mean, her whole thing, if you ever wanted to see what impulsive responses looks like from an influence character concern, you need to watch Logan. Because everything she does is impulsive, and the impact and the conflict she creates comes from that impulsive attitude that she has. And then finally, the relationship story, that family-daughter, dysfunctional family-daughter relationship, ends up in being or playing a role, which there you go. I mean, it's who's playing the role of father, playing the role of daughter, and the fact, like, what role are we supposed to play here? That is giving us conflict within that relationship, that sets that. And then finally, I got down to the very bottom. I skipped the variation level. I mean, I discussed it. Actually, no, we did discuss it. And underneath progress or how things are changing, you have four different issues, which are either fact and fantasy or security and threat. And he went right to fact and fantasy because he could clearly see, theme is obviously something that he's pretty strong at, he could clearly see that fantasy, the whole fantasy about the comic book, about the Wolverine legend, was what gave him the most amount of trouble. And the fact that, you know, that these facts, what's been told in these stories is not accurate. And that's great, because the issue of, the main character issue of Logan was in fact fantasy. And underneath that, the character elements are ending, unending, test, and trust. So one of those will be the problem, the opposite one will be the solution, and the other two will be the symptom and response. And it was great. Intuitively, he just went right to ending. So what's driving Logan, what's giving him the biggest problem, is just he wants it all to end. He's done with it. He's closed out. He wants to be completely finished with it, and that's not anything he's ever going to reconsider. And that's what's driving him. And then I showed how, in a changed story, the main character's problem, Dramatica sets, is the same exact problem in the overall story. So everybody in the overall story of Logan is also dealing with ending. They want to end all these kids. They want to close out that whole program. Like, the driving force of that entire film, which kind of gives it that feeling of that it's being pulled down and it's just coming to a complete end, is that ending element that's also reflected in the main character's through line. That's what ties the main character into the overall story and what makes it such a meaningful event when he finally changes and goes to the unending part of it, which is, you know, keeping that legend alive, the Wolverine legend alive, knowing that it's always going to keep going on and on, is what makes it possible for the overall story to also resolve itself with unending, where obviously these are going to be the next X-Men. You know, you have the ending and the passing of the torch from one generation to the next, and you have that infused into the actual narrative. You have it actually infused into the elemental structure of the entire thing. But the part that's really great is once you set all that, it gets it down to one story form, and then the influence character problem, which is what motivates Laura to do what she does, turns out to be accurate, which is hilarious because accurate in Dramatica definition is being within tolerances, and she's so completely out of tolerance, she's not even anywhere close, that it affects every single person. She's so outside of the societal norm that she just completely changes every single thing around her. So I will, of course, write up an entire analysis of the film and go over it and explain this all and probably do some videos on it. But it was just really great to be able to go through all the different story points using Dramatica to understand what was really going on within the narrative. That, of course, leads us to Dunkirk, which was Christopher Nolan's latest film and a great, fantastic film that you have to see in IMAX. I've already seen it twice. I loved it. I love Spitfires. I'm a huge fan of World War II aviation, or at least I was. And just being able to see that on screen with Hans Zimmer, providing his own version of Edward Elgar's variation, the Nimrod, is just, it's magnificent. I loved it. And it was great because when I was editing the podcast from last week, it was great to see that I actually successfully predicted the fact that there wasn't going to be a relationship story through line. I could tell from the trailers that there was no relationship in there. It was all about home. Home. What is it, sir? Home.
You can almost see it from here.
There's so much reference to home. It's like, okay, we get it. Home. It's home is over there. Oh, home's coming. Home is coming to save us. So it's very much very focused on an overall story through line. For sure. The entire film is overall story through line. And in that context, the overall story through line is a problematic situation. There's 400,000 men stuck on a beach in northern France, and they can't get home.
What is it? Home. You can almost see it from here.
So it's very definitely, there's a lot of overall story through line. But I'm not really sure where the relationship story through line is. And it's interesting because there is an actual story form in there that I was able to figure out afterwards. At first, I just kind of discounted it, and then when I was going over it, I was thinking, you know what, maybe there actually is something here, and it'd be interesting to see what Dramaticus says, what could have been in there instead to make the film a more complete narrative. Because to me, I mean, I really loved it, but especially that part when Home does arrive to save everybody, it comes across as kind of a, almost like a propaganda piece for Britain. You know, it's a very patriotic in that way, which is great because you don't get to see a lot of that. You certainly get to see a lot of American patriotism in cinema, but you don't get to often see British patriotism. So, I mean, that's great, but without that other added through line, without completing the argument and giving something else in there, it's very one-sided. You know, the Mark Rylance character, Mr. Dawson, is so strong and so such a huge force in the film that he completely overshadows everybody, and he becomes basically a personal embodiment of that Keep Calm and Carry On poster that you've seen everywhere. I mean, that's essentially him, you know, going to war, George. Very quiet and very understated. So what I did with the Throughline article that I did, the Throughline Thursdays for Dunkirk last week, I went ahead and made the influence character Throughline, I made it super bright, because I felt like it had the most impact. And the overall story through line is a close second. And then when it got to the main character, I kind of dimmed it down. I brought it down about 50% because it's not really clear who the main character of the film is. I mean, it probably is Timothy. You know, I mean, he was supposed to be part of the main character. I mean, we start with him, we end with him. And of course, his relationship with Mr. Harry Styles, that changes. I mean, it develops throughout. But with the relationship story through line, you often want to make it something that's not part of the overall story through line. So their relationship as soldiers, as comrades, that's covered in the overall story in the situation. There's no real relationship that they have outside of that. There's no like friendship, no sort of, I mean, there's a bit of a friendship there, but there's nothing else really much more past that. And that's why Peter, Mr. Dawson's son, he works as a nice main character as well, but his through line isn't really that developed. I mean, he does do some things, but it's not like, it's just really odd. It's very spread out, which is fine. It just doesn't give a cohesive sort of narrative to it. And I mean, he's got a great story weaving technique where, you know, it's split up between a week, a day, and an hour. And that's great because he works with time so well. It's fantastic. That stuff is really cool. But what I'm talking about is at the end of it all, when you look back at it and see what it's all about, the relationship story, the only heartfelt moment in the entire thing is when Peter tells the Killing Murphy character, the Shivering Soldier, when he tells him, like, no, he'll be fine, when they're talking about George, right? So that shows that Peter changed, right? And changed in the way that one should. And it also brought about the story form, the relationship story through line solution of acceptance, which is great. I mean, that works really well and makes for a consistent narrative. It just feels kind of odd because there wasn't a relationship that developed between Peter and the soldier. And I'm not sure if he probably could have done something like that, but perhaps something more could have been made out of the father-son relationship between Peter and Mr. Dawson. That would have made him more of a central character, and it would have definitely changed the tone of things. But it's interesting to me, looking back on it, when you figure out the narrative, I mean, to me, well, there's a couple things that's really interesting. One is the overall story concern of the present, right? It's all about survival. So again, this is yet another film in the last year or two that's all about survival, about surviving the here and now, which probably says a lot about our current condition, how people feel. But just the idea that this problem of, well, clearly the solution in the overall story is certainty. You know, it's kind of the opposite of Wonder Woman, where the solution of certainty solves all their issues. That entire Churchill speech where, you know, we'll fight them in the beaches, we'll fight them on land, we'll fight them in sea, we'll fight them in the streets. You know, that certainty is what resolves that situation and brings a successful outcome to the narrative, which then gives a problem of potentiality. And when you have 400,000 people on the beach and the potential of losing, and everybody's just focused in on that, that's what's driving everybody, is the potential disastrous outcome or potential disastrous ending to the entire British people. When people focus on that, that's when they get into problems. You know, the potential of, we're going to die if we don't get on a boat, so we're going to do all this work to get on the boat, and then that's actually going to end up getting us killed. Or even the guys that are on the overturned minesweeper at the end, you know, they're on the overturned minesweeper and they're fine, they're safe, And then they see the Henkel coming around for another pass, and so that potential is like, oh, shoot, we're going to get killed, so we're going to jump back into the ocean. But jumping back in the ocean then put them in an oil spill. So then when Tom Hardy takes out the Henkel and it smashes into the ocean and lights the oil on fire, they all die. So that's a problem of potentiality. And the same thing with Harry Styles, you know, this guy is potentially a German spy. That's the whole film is about potentiality and about that fear, having fear come out of potentiality, and how certainty, you know, ends it and resolves it. And that's why Peter's definite claim, like, hey, no, George is fine, before he was, you know, willing to lock Killian up in a, you know, the closet downstairs because he was worried about the potential that guy had to kind of go off on everybody. But if he hadn't done that, Killian Murphy wouldn't have ran upstairs and knocked George on his head. So certainty there is definitely the resolution of it. And of course, it's cool because it puts the relationship story problem in non-acceptance, but there really isn't a relationship that's built on non-acceptance from the very beginning. Towards the end, it's like, oh, you know what? Maybe we should have done that. And there are elements of it and some of the relationships between people. But truly, the relationship story through line of Dunkirk is certainly missing and quite possibly could have made it a more heartfelt story. I'm not sure if that's absolutely necessary, but when you read reviews or criticisms and people speak of, you know, either Christopher Nolan can't tell a story, which I don't understand that at all. To me, he obviously can tell a story. Or they feel like there's just something missing, they're not sure what it is. It's usually the relationship story through line is what they're talking about. So there is a Throughline Thursdays article for Dunkirk, which is there. I'll be writing an analysis of it, you know, a feature article about it. And I've already recorded a story-forming video for it. And if you're not a member of Narrative First, this is premium content where I go through and actually do screenshot, you know, video tutorial of how to use Dramatica to successfully figure out the narrative of a story. Obviously, use it when I'm analyzing something, and I do that because it's, you know, there's already something there that we can talk about. But you can use the same techniques to create your own story, like I was talking about in that email course. And so if you're not a Narrative First member and you want to see the story forming video for Dunkirk, then you'll definitely want to sign up. And you can find out more about that at narrativefirst.com/membership. So that brings us to Captain America Civil War, which I had no idea was going to be such an important film in my Narrative First life. I wasn't bored, but I actually took a day off Sunday, and I noticed that the film was on Netflix, which to me means it's free, and I can finally watch it. So after I stopped watching the last sequence, the Darth Vader sequence from Rogue One, about 20 times, after I stopped doing that, then I put on Captain America Civil War, and I watched it, and it was very enjoyable. It was fun. Parts of it seem a bit silly to me now. Everybody landing in that same pose and same sort of things. Parts of it are, I know a lot of people take it really seriously, but overall, though, I thought it told a complete narrative. It was something that I'd seen before several times, and so just for fun, I quickly jotted down the story form and presented it to the discussion forum, discuss.dramatica.com, because I remember, I thought it was a year ago, somebody talked about Civil War, and they had questions about the story form, and they were kind of confused as to where the story form possibly could be, and I didn't look at the thread, because I didn't want to be influenced by it until I saw the film on Sunday. So then I brought it up and started to read through it, and it was great, because the person who brought it up felt, well, I think he thought it was weird because he believed that Iron Man, or Tony Stark, the Robert Downey Jr. character, was the main character, and he found that odd in a film called Captain America Civil War. I didn't think that was odd at all. I completely agreed with that, because to me it was really clear that, you know, Tony's the one that we actually get to know his personal issues and where he's coming from and the struggle that he has, which is, you know, the reason why he's driven to avoid any kind of conflict, particularly, you know, any more trouble with the Avengers, is because he knows what happens. He doesn't want to make any rash decisions like he made when he was 18 or however old he was in that cool augmented reality sequence. So we get an idea of where that is. And like I said about Logan, that ties him into the overall story through line where everybody's trying to avoid or prevent any further loss of innocent life, right? That's actually what's driving the story, is that motivation to avoid any further conflict and any further loss of innocent life is what brings about the Sokovia Accords. And that's great, because then that ties Tony into the overall story. And then his eventual change, when he eventually adopts Captain America's, you know, influence character point of view, that's what actually resolves the story. Now, the interesting part is, I called it a typical revenge story. And the reason I did that is because the story form itself falls, at least the overall story through line falls, in the self-interest issue, which is a quad of elements consisting of avoid, pursuit, control, and uncontrolled. Now, this one is used so many times. Almost every movie from the 20th century is pursuit, avoid, control, and uncontrolled, especially mid-20th century, and issues of self-interest. And so when I say a typical revenge story, I'm talking about a typical revenge story form. And here, Zemo, that bad guy, it's all about revenge. It's all about bringing Captain America and Iron Man into a place where they're going to fight, and it's going to tear apart the Avengers. That's the obtaining goal. That's what the goal of the story is. And it's interesting because he's the one driving it. He's the one pursuing that course and getting people, wanting them to consider the fact that they should be enemies and not friends. So that puts the quote-unquote bad guy in the position of protagonist. And that's why when it's a successful outcome, it's like, yay, they split apart. But inside you're like, well, wait a second, why am I cheering for this? And the reason for it is because the narrative itself is setting up these dynamics so that you are, as an audience member, siding. We've been trained to side with the protagonist of a narrative. So regardless of whether or not what they're doing is good or bad, the person pursuing and motivating people to consider, that's the protagonist. And so that's what the successful part about it is. And he gets his revenge. He gets what he's waiting for. And we as an audience, I mean, that's what, to me, that's what I went to go see it the whole time. Like, when are they going to fight? When are they going to fight? And it's like, here we go. Okay, this is awesome. This is what I've been waiting for. So it's very weird that it's great. It's very fascinating how narrative works that way. And when I talk about self-interest as the issue, it's not that people are being selfish. Okay, so the basic understanding of self-interest and morality, which is the thematic counterpart to self-interest, is that one is about being selfish and one is about doing what's best for other people. In this case, self-interest is all about doing what's best for you, not in a selfish way, but essentially the idea that it's my way or the highway, right? I mean, that is a self-interested attack, a self-interested perspective, a self-interested issue that is presented in the story. Whereas the kind of moral thing is like, well, maybe we should hold off and not let the Avengers do what they're supposed to do. But of course, other people have ideas of what morality is. And well, no, the best thing for people is to always be there to be their protector and that kind of thing. So the issues, all the problems are coming from this self-interested my way or the highway sort of perspective. And that's where Captain America is coming from. I mean, he's right in some respects, but in some respects he's bad. And I thought the film did a great job of keeping the balance between those two. And then that leads to the discussion about why you would put the overall story in activity. To me, it's very clear, because you put the overall story in activity because there's a lot of fighting and punching and kicking and conflict in the story that comes out of activities. You can look at the trailer, just basically look at the trailer, and you see, oh, this is an overall story of activity. When you put the main character in situation, because he's Tony Stark, and you know he's the man responsible for all these deaths and kind of the leader, it gives him an issue of delay or procrastination, which is great because he's putting off. He didn't say goodbye to his father. He doesn't want to do any fights, right? Or he didn't say I love you to his father. That kind of stuff, that's his personal issue. It puts Steve, Mr. Captain America, in fixed attitude. His attitude is a huge pain in the ass to everybody and makes people want to punch him in his pretty little teeth, right? That's where he has his issue of hope. It's his optimistic outlook, it's his hope, and it's a very realistic hope that what he's doing is the right thing, and that's what creates the most impact. And then it creates a relationship story between Steve and Tony that is a friendship, a dysfunctional friendship that's slowly dissolving and slowly tearing itself apart and slowly becoming or changing its nature, which is what that concern is all about. To me, that was a very clear genre setting. And, you know, I put that up there and said, you know, it's a typical revenge story and it's great and it's great that it all worked out the way it did. And then there was an author that came on to the discuss.dramatica.com, Sebastian de Castell, who's a great author. If you haven't read the Traitor's Blade series, you have to. They're super fun. So fun that I take forever to read them because I don't want them to end. I'm that kind of person. His Spellslinger series is great, and he has other stuff coming up that's insanely awesome. So you definitely want to check that out, Sebastian de Castell, and I'll leave links to it in the show notes for sure. But he got on, and he's a great writer, and he put the overall story in Fixed Attitude, which was like, what? Which would put the relationship story in Situation, and I believe he had Steve in Activities as the main character, and Tony as the influence character, and we just went back and forth over all the different... I tried to explain how it's, like, virtually impossible to see the film in that way from a Dramatica point of view. And somebody had mentioned, well, it's interesting, it's a subjective point of view, and everybody's going to have their own kind of opinion on it. Once you understand what it is that Dramatica is looking at, then there's only one answer. And I'm hoping what I can do is, you know, going through it and explaining everything, I'm hoping eventually I get to a place where I'll be able to explain this. Because the biggest problem most people have when they come to Dramatica is the idea that these story points, they use them as storytelling. So when they see a signpost of learning, they think, well, the characters are going to learn something. Or if they see a problem of obtaining, or I'm sorry, not a problem of obtaining, but a signpost of obtaining, well, the characters obtain the secret government documents. That's not what the story points are about. So the entire perspectives, all the through lines, they're looking at an inequity, which is a sense of separateness, which is two things, or, you know, things that can't exist in the same place at the same time. There's like a separateness. That's the basis of all conflict. And so when you're looking at that inequity from the different through lines, they pop up in the different story points. But they're not just storytelling. They're actually reflections of that inequity just at different levels. So the problem is the smallest version of it. The issue is the next largest version of it. The concern is the next greatest version of it. And then finally, the through line is the biggest example of what that inequity looks like. And that carries through all the signposts, all the problem, solution, symptom, and response, benchmark, critical flaw, unique abilities. They're all looking at inequity. So when you look at a signpost of learning, it's not just that they learn something, it's that there's difficulty learning something, difficulty gathering information, right? The overall concern of How to Train Your Dragon is learning or training dragon killers. So it's that training, that what kind of strategy that you go through and the different ways that you go about your lesson plans and how you're going to deliver this information. There's actually difficulty in that delivering of that information or learning that information from the other side. That's actually a conflict. And that's why when I go through the story form that I have for Captain America Civil War, to me it seems super clear that the act order is understanding, learning, doing, and obtaining. That's a very classic sort of plot progression. It's the same plot progression that's in Star Wars, where the film starts out or the narrative starts out with some kind of problematic misunderstanding, people misunderstanding other people, or, you know, misunderstanding other people's intentions, you know, so it's like, hey, I didn't mean to blow up the building. Well, it's like, well, you did. And then going to gathering information and the difficulty of, like, figuring out why somebody is doing something, trying to deliver, you know, delivering misinformation, like that kind of stuff, you know, leading people to think that somebody else is responsible for someone's death. That's a problem. And so that's why that fits in there. Then, of course, the doing is the entire airport sequence. I mean, there are problems there of fighting and superheroes fighting each other. That's what everybody went to go see the film. That's what they were hoping to get, and that's where conflict exists there. And then finally, the obtaining at the end, in the same way that in Star Wars, they went from, you know, just fighting the TIE fighters in that TIE fighter sequence to actually, you know, destroying the Death Star. This was actually destroying the Avengers and how tearing themselves apart and getting that revenge. Tony getting revenge on for his father's death, Zemo getting revenge for what happened to his family, like all that is about obtaining. So to me, that's a really, really clear plot progression. If you're actually looking at the story form from the point of view that Dramatica is looking at a story form, which is inequity. So I'm hoping I'll be able to discuss this. I'll leave a link to the discussion forum post for now, and eventually I'll develop some articles and be able to execute this in a way that hopefully will get across the message, because I come up with it a lot with the Dramatica mentorship program, and I have to work through it with each and every student, trying to unravel their preconceptions as to what Dramatica is, and also their preconceptions as to what conflict is, so that they understand the difference between an inequity and just using a story point as kind of like, a Mad Libs, a storytelling by numbers sort of thing. So hopefully I'll be able to explain that in greater detail. But for now, the thing that was really great that came out of this is when I was going back and forth with Sebastian, just for fun, because the other point is, because he's a novelist, and novelists have a much harder time with this, a lot of it, they see the story from the point of view of the characters, and I consider that subjective and the author is objective. Regardless of what that is, and maybe there's a better way to describe it, the plot sequence report that's in Dramatica is supposed to be what structure looks like from the point of view of your characters. And it's really interesting because it shows you the screwed up model, right? That model that you get at dramatica.com/downloads is just, it's the model at rest. And here in the plot sequence report, you actually get to see it all twisted up. And so just for fun, I put up the overall story plot sequence. And to me, it's almost like a virtual beat sheet, like a 32 beat, actually, what is it, 16 beat sheet of like the entire story. Like it starts with permission and ends with rationalization. I mean, the film starts with like, okay, you can't do this, to, hey, I'm going to do what it takes in order to save my friends. I mean, that's permission to rationalization. And, you know, the entire airport sequence is knowledge, ability, desire, and thought, which is the core elements of when you're fighting and you're just down to the essence, the nature of people. Like, to me, like this, and maybe it's just because I'm really ultra familiar with all these words, this reads like the journey that the characters in Captain America Civil War go through. And I find that very exciting. One, because it shows the predictive nature of Dramatica, which is like magic to me. But two, if I was to actually write a film like this, and this is what actually the story that I wanted to tell, it's outlining for me my sequences. Like I could just sit down there and start coming up with the different sequences, and it's kind of guiding me along the way. And then I could weave in the main character, the influence character. By that time, I'll know exactly what it is. And definitely the relationship story, you know, seeing the relationship as an actual thing instead of, Sebastian had mentioned that the relationship story concern is they're concerned with the situation that's happening around them. Okay, that's looking at the story point as storytelling, like from their point of view. We're looking at the situation and it is a concern to us. That's not what Dramatica's concern of a situation in a relationship story is talking about. It's saying the overriding concern of the relationship is a situation, a balance, a power play or a level of external situation between the two of them that is out of whack. And I use the example of doubt, which is the same thing, a relationship story of situation where it's the power play between a priest and a nun, or the example of To Kill a Mockingbird, where the racism that's in the overall story is reflected in the situation between a scared girl and the boogeyman that lives across the street. And so they're in that kind of fixed situation relative to each other. Hamlet's another one where it's like that father-son relationship, the actual situation is he's dead. He's a ghost. And it's like there's all this guilt between the fact that he's dead and Hamlet's alive, and that their relationship there, that is a relationship story concern of situation. It's not that they're concerned about the situation, but that there's an actual situation that is problematic. And I hope I can figure out some way to deliver that information and make it more sense over the coming days. But for now, I mean, if you just look at that plot sequence and you watch the film, if you haven't seen it before, it's fun. Watch it again if you've seen it before, and just follow along the sequences and you'll see that, I mean, the first act is all about permission, need, expediency and deficiency, what we can and can't do, what we need and needn't do, what we should and shouldn't do, and what we want and won't do. I mean, that's the whole argument that sets up the whole potential for the entire thing. And it's all seen under the context of understanding, because they're misunderstanding the activities that the Avengers went through that were actually problematic. So that's it for this week's podcast. If you have any questions about Logan, Dunkirk, or Captain America Civil War, please send them my way, and I will try to answer them as best I can. Be sure to look for that story-forming video of Dunkirk, where I explain how I figured out all the through lines. Have a great week of writing, and I will see you next time.